shift gears and guests. We get to finish this hour of the exchange with some music. Tomorrow is First Friday, the day of our First Friday art segment. And we mark the occasion with something like a First Friday Eve, bringing in Josh Gross from the Rogue Valley Messenger for a segment featuring bands coming to the region. It is called Rogue Sounds. Josh, good to see you back in the studio once again.
Good to see you too, Jeffrey.
So, February, things heating up just a little bit. People, I always think in terms of a January.
Heating is a curious choice of words for this particular February. It's like we finally got around to opening the ski area.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Okay, so I'm parsing metaphors at this point. But no, I'm going to. No, February is probably the low point. But you know what? That just means that if you go out there, you're committed. You're in it to win it. And anyone who's out there touring in February, that means they're in it to win it too. And they're going to give you everything they have because they're probably desperate and playing for money to pay off like a drug habit or like chemo or something like that. So you know this is going to be a good show. February is terrible, and that's why February is where it's at.
All right. So let me make a disclaimer there on potential drug habits or any of the acts we'll be talking about in the next 15 minutes.
Hey, I'm not judging. I'm just saying that if you're out touring in February, you know, like you're motivated. Let's go with that.
Okay, sounds good. Let us get on to the acts here because, and I should point out, I think I have in the past, but I deliberately don't listen to these cuts of music and don't ask for you to set them up before we play them because that way I'll come in untainted by any sort of
fresh ears, yeah.
But I will say this about having to dig up a picture for today's segment to put on the website was that when I looked at Smomed.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure what I was seeing because what he's holding looks like a chainsaw or a guitar, depending on which way you hold it.
A little bit. Smomed, that's an excellent way to segue into him because Smomed is a guy who like belongs to a sort of like subsection of musicians who like where like the music is kind of like a third to half of what they do. Like they're talented instrumentalists, but part of what makes their stuff so interesting is he only plays instruments that he has actually made himself. And he primarily makes instruments that are like sort of like complex, unusual computer interfaces. So he's making music that not only cannot be played by anyone else, but like could not be played on any other particular instrument because he's actually engineering a thing in order to make a sound that can only be made on that one thing that he engineered. And what he's made is this kind of like hybrid sort of MIDI controller guitar sort of thing that he uses to then play a lot of stuff, interact with the computer, and do. I mean, let's hear it. You get the idea.
So this is one guy making.
It's one guy. He's interesting because he's got like a lot of sort of strains of like classical and baroque with a lot of sort of like experimental like jazz and like ambient mixed in. But again, you know, filtered through the idea that like part of what's so impressive about seeing this is also just the idea that this is not just an instrument he went and bought at the store, but like part of the act, part of the show is that like he made that.
Is he a coder too? I mean, is he like writing computer code to help make some of these sounds through MIDI?
That I don't know. I do know he's like physically constructed, you know, the interfaces and the instruments. But it's not uncommon that people do have to, when you get into like that sort of like tech world of it, that you do have to do a little bit of coding. So
wow, that's impressive stuff. So
if there's any synthesizer dorks out there or engineering classes looking for a field trip, I really highly recommend going to check out the Smomed show at Johnny B's in Medford on
February 6th,
yeah.
Are we pronouncing it right, Smomed, and it's just one guy?
You know what? If we're not, the only way to find out if we're not pronouncing it correctly is to go to the show and say, hey, how do you pronounce your name, sir? Smomed?
Smomed, yeah.
Smomed, wow. Smomed.
Is it something backwards? Let's see.
It actually stands for something modified MIDI interface, I believe.
Sure. That makes sense. Okay. Josh Gross is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange with this month's edition of Rogue Sounds. Let's move on to a band that, wow, just the season when we've had the second wave of people getting sick in the newsroom. This band is called Summer Colds.
Yeah, right. You just hear them or you want to
talk
about
them first?
All right.
Everyone's got something. I'll shout it out some.
some fun stuff. That's a good rhythm
section.
Yeah,
it's good power pop. So Summer Colds is the project of a local guy, Nick McNamara, who had a great band called Black Bears Fire, and they put out a vinyl album. It was one of my favorite albums of, 2015, I think, 2015, 2016. And then he just kind of decided to take a little time off and sort of, rethink what he was doing. And he spent a long time working on this new band, putting it together kind of, in secret. And this is actually going to be their local live debut, which I'm pretty excited about because they're going to be playing at the iPub on Sunday, February 11th in downtown Ashland. And downtown Ashland has really needed a venue of about that size for a while, and iPub seems to be making a go of it, and it's great to see it bringing out new acts that are finally going, oh, look, there's a place for us to play. I really want to bring this out, and I'm really excited. Their debut single that we were listening to, their Whiteout, is super cool, and I'm stoked to hear the rest of the album. It's got this kind of great, 90s power pop, Matthew Sweet kind of sound.
Mm-hmm. Forgive the slack jawness, but I hadn't even heard of iPub before.
Ryan's Irish Pub.
Oh, it was the old Ryan's place. Okay. Oh, that I. Okay.
Yeah. Irish pub, come on, get with the slang, Jeffrey. What's the problem?
Sorry, I'm way too old for that. You mentioned that that Nick McNamara put out a vinyl album a couple of years ago instead of a CD. Was it just in vinyl?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they may have pressed some CDs as well, but vinyl actually sells better than CDs, but usually at this point, especially on the small level. So, CDs are they're definitely the most efficient mechanism of they're cheap to make, they're cheap to distribute, but they also offer pretty much exactly the same experience that you get from streaming. And the most common thing people use them for is to rip them to their computer to transfer them to MP3s. And it's a good vehicle to do that. It's cheaper than say putting out a USB drive and stuff like that. But by and large, vinyl sales have actually gone up every year for the last 10 years or something like that. And they end up being it's more like a collectible thing. So when people are really into a thing, they really want the vinyl that goes with it. It's kind of an inefficient means of listening to the music, which means that you have to be dedicated to it. And for small bands, it's kind of like a big marquee gold star on their resume to say, yeah, we pressed this to vinyl. We pressed it to marble vinyl. We did it on, and it's a big thing. And, it's kind of like a status symbol to say that you either pressed or got the, limited run vinyl or something.
Is it a physical manifestation thing? Because one of the things that I always appreciate about vinyl is being able to actually pick it up and hold it in, and your hands are, 12 inches apart.
There's a lot of deep dives on this, and that's definitely a big part of it. I mean, if you just do a comparison between vinyl and CDs, vinyl is bigger. That makes it more impressive. The cover art is bigger.
Does look better.
It seems grander. It has this just, it feels legitimate. CDs feel a little oh, whatever. This is an IKEA put-together desk. Not some 3,000-pound piece of oak that's been built into this mansion forever and has been written on by everyone from Thomas Jefferson to whoever.
We should observe a moment of silence for the IKEA founder who died.
The point is, it feels serious, incredible. It's what the bands that the legendary bands all did, and you are doing the same thing. And it just has an emotional resonance that MP3s have never really had for people, even though everyone agrees they're much easier to use.
Josh Gross is here with Rogue Sounds. Up next, Slim Cessna's Auto Club.
Oh yeah.
The first and last time I met her, we was children 7 years apart. She held my hand so softly, she was perfectly shy. My family went to wander 6 years in foreign lands.
Well, there's a mix of influences.
Yeah, yes. Slim Cessna, they're from Denver, they were doing this kind of music in the late 80s when no one was doing it. And it's that kind of that trended over from gospel into gothic, this sort of evil country music where it's more like the country I think Jello Biafra from the Dead Kennedys described them as the band that would be playing in the bar at the end of the world, which is, a great way of putting it. But they really do have this, they're in that murder ballads, they're in the, the just sort of dark Americana, the American Gothic poster, but, there's someone hiding in the barn behind them with a chainsaw and whatever was going on in Texas Chainsaw right. Massacre. It's they're a really interesting band. But on top of that, really phenomenal musicians, not just sort of mining pop culture tropes, but really, really talented musicians, great harmonies, great songwriting, and some just shredding banjo playing.
That is Slim Cessna's Auto Club at Johnny B's February 22nd. Let's move on to Whitney Rose.
Yeah.
Maybe at the bar, they said, let's have a seat. Wasn't very long
So have we featured her before? It seems like
No, really? No, not at all. She's just got a very classic sound.
Wow, she really does.
Yeah.
That's a great voice.
Yeah, Whitney Rose, she is from an island in British Columbia originally and then moved to Austin, Texas. Has been kind of working her way up through the touring circuit doing this just great hybrid of like old, like classic style country and kind of like girl group pop. And just with a great voice, just great songwriting. And she's going to be coming to the Talent Club in Talent on February 24th, and they are really excited about it. They're like, "Whoa, man, we've never done anything like this before. I think this may be." I was talking to the booker there, and he was really excited that Whitney Rose is going to be coming. And we have an interview that's going to be coming out with her in the next issue of The Messenger, I believe. So if you want to learn some more about her, you can definitely keep your eyes peeled for that.
That is the Rogue Valley Messenger online and free for distribution in the public in physical form, right?
Yeah, free online and, you know, free in person. But for you, Jeffrey, only $20.
Wow, how did I end up on the must-pay list? So Whitney Rose Talent Club, February 24th. And then that moves us off to our final act of the day, Toy Zoo.
Toy Zoo.
All right, definitely some dancing on that one, I think.
Yeah, these are some, I used to see these guys go play back when I lived in Idaho, and they were just so much fun. Just goofy, silly, you know, play some like Casio, some like toy instruments. Used to wear masks a lot. Just get a good dance party going. Just good, like, good fun rock. And they're going to be playing at King Waz, the Bamboo Room at King Waz on February 20th. And I think that's going to be just a hoot and holler and good time.
I was wondering, as I heard the vocals there, though, if anybody has been able to track through history, who was the first person to sing through a megaphone into a microphone?
Well, geez, Jeffrey. I mean,
working
like
the historian mind of Josh Grossi.
If you really want to parse that out, I mean, the sort of original Victrolas were technically megaphones.
Oh, that's, I do love the picture. Have you seen the pictures of orchestras cutting records back in the day?
Yeah, no, they're
gigantic
actually
horns going on to the.
Originally, whatever the first recording was, it was probably recorded through a megaphone. Because that's basically the same sort of. It's just a sort of sound funnel.
All right. So as long as you're here and we're talking about music and we've got a couple minutes left, I wanted to ask about whether you have any use for the Grammy Awards or if that's the kind of thing you steer clear of with, you know, an 11-foot pole.
Oh, man. There was an episode of The Simpsons that covered this a while back, and they were talking about – they were doing a sort of little thing, and it was on the Grammys, and they said something about how, like, this particular award wasn't, like, that big of an honor. And then they said, disclaimer, the producers of The Simpsons would like you to know that we do not consider the Grammys an award at all. And I was like, yeah, you get them, The Simpsons. I mean, the Grammys are tricky because they're – it's not that the things that come across are not of high quality. It's that they're just of a very narrow window of high quality, and it's unlike a lot of other major industry awards. It's ones that seems to historically and just in this reporter's opinion have a lot more to do with the industry and with sales specifically than it does with some sort of like measurement of quality.
I did hear people on NPR talking about them the next day. They were talking about, well, the reason this one was such a big deal was because it sold so well.
Yeah, and that's very unusual because, I mean, with movies, frankly, like, you know, like the ones that make the biggest box office, the ones that have the most money spent on them are not – it does not always track that they're the ones that, like, you know, come out ahead in, like, the Oscars or anything like that. Because there is some sort of saying, like, this is candy. You know, maybe we spend a lot of money on candy, but it's not what's really, like, of high quality. But with music, you know, it's hard to really to rate and measure, like, any kind of art. But there is a much broader and deeper bench of underground music and highly influential music. And if you look back through, like, sort of cultural history, the stuff that was a really big deal is almost never the stuff that won the Grammys. It's the stuff that took 20 years for people to look back and go, like, man, that changed everything.
It is interesting to get to a point in life where you really look back at the music you liked 30 years ago and, wow, that didn't age that well, or that came out really good. Let's run through the list again. Smomid, Johnny B's, February 6th. Summer Colds at iPub on February 11th. Slim Cessna's Auto Club at Johnny B's on February 22nd. Whitney Rose at the Talent Club on February 24th. And Toy Zoo at King Waz on the 20th.
All of them, too good for the Grammys.
Too good for the Grammys. Final word, great one. Thanks for that, Josh Gross.